All right. Welcome back to the Watson Weekend. If our voices sound a little bit hoarse, maybe a little smug, it's kind of like we survived something together because I think we kind of did.
We sure did, Rick. This week's show is coming to you post NRF, hence Rick's NRF hangover, where we were live at Asylum in New York City. It's for the second time, right? This is our second year doing a live show, and it was so fun. I am still riding the high. I'll probably be impossible because I was mic'd up, you guys. I had a whole Britney vibe, pre-head shave Britney, good dance moves. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, pre-head shave Britney, I think, is an important qualifier.
It really is an important qualifier because, you know, she was on her A game for many, many years. And now it's off the game.
Right.
But free Britney.
Yeah, it was really good to see everyone. We have a little clip video we're going to talk through here. Asylum is not representative of anything like inmates here, but what you're seeing is kind of the incoming, the bar, some of the networking. You know, that we showed a lot of great conversations, super good feud. There's your red hair, Jess.
That's all right. That's all right.
It's an inside joke for later.
It is. It is. You'll learn more later. If you know, you know.
The dumplings were on point.
Oh, so good. The to-go boxes were really smart. Yeah. Who's the band there? We had live band.
Yeah. Jackie and Aaron from Ryle. Super excited to have them here. We had a live band this year.
That's all right. It was like a can't stop, won't stop moment. The bar continually raised. Rick in the sequin jacket. You know, when the sequins come out, it's time to rally.
Yeah,
we're ready to go. Throw it down.
We had Nick Kapling emceeing the whole event. He was taking us through our programming. We had a great panel discussion with David Katz from Randa, Dina Rosenblum from Hair Story, and Emma Lawson from Kate. A lot of really great insights and. Wrapped up on my keynote discussion, which was a heck of a lot of fun, a lot of really great imagery, and no pun intended. A lot of it was very bold. The message for people from the event is to be bold in 2026, mostly because in 2025, it felt like a lot of people were waiting on the sidelines. Like, what's going to happen with the economy, the consumer, tariffs? There was like just so many what ifs that people got them wrapped themselves around the axle. So hopefully we can break through that in 2026.
Absolutely. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. So if you weren't there, we'll give you a preview of some of the content that we talk through, but we will be releasing the video. I know Rick will kind of put that out there so people can see it. But I just also want to give a shout out to the sponsors, to the people that showed up, to the conversations, and those that were willing to come on that journey with us, which this was supposed to be not your typical NRF event. And just a shout out to Rick, you, the team, like you ensured that happened. So it was really fun.
Yeah, you know, especially our title sponsor, Radial. I mean, the sponsor of this episode, Miracle, was there, but we had a number of others, eDesk, Pied 17. Revo, Crystal, the list goes on. So we were blessed to have a number of great sponsors for the event.
Absolutely. So for this show today, we're going to break down some of those stories. Like Rick said, it is about being bold and not necessarily our predictions for the year per se, but these are, and they're not maybe manifestations at this stage. We're just kind of like Nostradamus, I think, right? So
yeah, we're getting close.
Yeah, we're getting pretty close, right? So, yeah, Rick, let's go through story one. What's your vision board on these AI wars? What's going to happen here?
Yeah, the vision is OpenAI is obviously the originator of the space, particularly in LLMs, not AI, clearly. But people forget Google has been working on AI for 20 years.
Right.
When billions of people every single day are trying to spam your index, you need a lot of great stuff to try to figure out how to make that high quality. And so Google has a leg up that many other companies don't have. And so the idea, if you look at the last several months, Gemini adoption keeps creeping up and up and to the point that we're at 30% now. So the prediction is that this is not going to reverse despite OpenAI's continued partnerships, announcements, new execs they hire. Google just keeps shipping. The CEO of Google, Sundar Pichai, was at NRF on stage. That was a big deal for commerce. Google UCP is a new protocol for agentic commerce. And essentially what Google is trying to do is to become the default layer of intelligence on the entire internet and everything that's connecting it to.
Yeah. And I believe that journey's already started, right? As you said, we've been using Docs, we've been using Gmail, and AI is integrated really in every aspect of that. They also have this very strong partnership with Samsung and Android, and Samsung's already said AI is going to be on more than double the phone. So from 400 million to 800 million this year. And with that, you've just got this powerhouse really that can't be ignored because distribution is the name of the game. They already have it and people are interacting with these tools in their daily life. So this isn't going to be a, oh, let me go to ChatGPT and open the app. I'm already in the app, right, Rick?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Google has over 5 billion searches a day. I mean, there are billions of devices that already use Android. Over 75% worldwide of operating systems is controlled by Google. You have to think about that. And so that's the, personally, I have found that Gemini is much more like efficient and it doesn't have the same attitude that ChatGPT has. ChatGPT is great for summarizing things, as is Gemini. But I find that when ChatGPT gets down a rabbit hole, it goes far down and then it starts gaslighting you. It gets angry if you try to correct it. So Gemini doesn't mostly do that. It feels more to me like if Gemini makes a mistake, it's more like you didn't explain it well enough.
Right.
And it's asking for your help. And you're like, oh, I see why it did that. Let me give it better instructions so that I can give it help it be more successful, like an intern or something.
Sure, totally. And I mean, Nano Banana is just way more fun to say than OpenAI. I'm just going to leave it there, right? Okay. Yeah, so you want to go to the next one?
Yeah, our next story is Nike, who is obviously an iconic, beloved brand, one of the top brands in the world. They recently switched out their CEO in the last 12 months. The longtime veteran over poor John Donahoe, who was kicked to the curb. And now I think he's like managing the basketball team at Stanford or something now. I mean, it's quite a fall from grace.
You put him into the ball boy category.
I think that's what he is. He's like, you know, when the balls, you know, I won't say what I'm going to say here.
All right.
Well, it's not gonna come out. It's not going to come out well
redirect,
in the podcast. So anyway, we have a new CEO. The turnaround is working. I think that the stock is improving from where it was. But the question is it good enough?
Yeah, it's not. And this is why, you know, activists don't show up when a company is on fire. They show up when brands are doing okay and it's unacceptable. And that's how you get activists and circling Target. Starbucks gets a reminder that vibes aren't a strategy. And Disney learns that magic isn't like, it isn't developed out of, without a spreadsheet, right? Like the math still needs to work. And for Nike, I think the macro excuse tour is over and investors are really losing patience. They're kind of done funding these experiments that are like journey and visionary. So there's a couple things that we broke down here of like, what were the pitfalls and like the things that we know these activist investors are really going to come in and take shape. And I think one is the D2C strategy, right? It was like this, it was a strategy, but then it became a religion for them. It was like a doctrine. And when they pulled back from wholesale and they lost shelf dominance, and then you have Adidas and On saying, thank you, sir, may we have another, like, it's just not the vibe story anymore. Nike isn't cool enough to just own all D2C and bring everybody to the site. The reality check is people still discover things in store.
Ah, right.
Who knew?
Yeah, who knew? I mean, I think that's definitely, I think, a great summary. Pulling back from distribution is not a big thing. To me, I focus a lot on innovation.
Yeah.
If you look at a lot of the innovation that's happened, it's from other companies. Mm-hmm. And marathoners, it does feel like, you know, Nike Pegasus has stayed up pretty well. But the ultimate statement I heard in the last several months from Nike, from their CEO, was like, Nike forgot running.
They did.
It's almost like a cardinal sin
yeah.
for me to forget what brought you there. I still remember. I still remember in the 80s and 90s, I can't remember when it came out, like that iconic Beatles mm-hmm. Nike Air commercial that mm-hmm. like just everyone just loved hearing about, because Nike Air was such like a watershed moment in the industry.
Yeah.
That is the kind of innovation we expect from Nike. And
right.
so do we think that this is a good step? I think the CEO has done a lot of good things. Are we at the point where, you know, we have the next sort of Steve Jobs sort of type at the helm of Nike? I'm not quite sure yet.
Yeah, I think you're right. Like the strategic language is so beautiful. Consumer-led, community-driven,
so
brand storytelling. It's wonderful and it helps you at story time, but it doesn't put, you know, dollars in the EBITDA bucket, which is ultimately what people care about. And the P&L is a bit tired, right? The margins, they're operating in like the low to mid 40s. Whereas you look at On, I go back to On, we talked about this, you know, On's margins were at like 58%, grew to 59% last year. So nearing that 60. And so you look at the P&L and people are thinking, yeah, Nike still got more operating capital, but at the end of the day, On is kind of throwing off more margin. And why can't Nike do that? And so this complexity, some of the bloat maybe that's come in the organization, I think is ripe for an activist investor to like come in and shake things up.
Yeah. And I think the story behind those gross margins to me is that Nike is having to compete on price and On
right.
is not.
Right.
And that is a huge thing that gets to the innovation deficit that Nike has experienced. So.
That's right. Okay. So our note for Nike, if they care, from the Watson weekend, it's same swoosh, less chaos, just actually do it, right?
Yes. No, for sure. Okay. Yeah. Our next prediction, which we showed during our session at NRF, was Shopify seems to be quietly rewriting its own job description. I mean, there've been a lot of AI investment in Shopify's roadmap for the last year, so much so that you almost wonder if they're a storefront company anymore.
Yeah.
They've worked a ton on Sidekick. Sidekick is integrating with all the App Store. And so we've seen that there's going to be AI integration there. We've seen a lot of integration with Google, OpenAI, you know, support for the new UCP protocol, along with a number, you know, many other vendors too. But Shopify, you know, I think a lot of people were very upset that they stole sort of like the headline splash for the Google announcement, even if other vendors did technically also contribute to the spec. Shopify had more, got more benefit out of it. So what we're trying to say here is that, you know, this is a little bit tongue in cheek. I don't think they're a get out of the storefront business, but from a forward investment point of view, it doesn't seem to be where the action is anymore.
Right. You're not going to talk about the optimizations of the UX, the like how many times a brand has like reinvented their homepage as their front door. if we go to the next slide, I mean, I think you guys brought this point home. It's not where the narrative is. The narrative is in payments, AI, B2B. And I think that, you know, my question for you, Rick, is like, what is Shopify anymore, right? You know, we had this, I think, perception for so long. And what I think the thing is, like, it's not themes. It's not the brand experience, although I think that had been their rise of the simplicity. So do you think that Shopify ends up having a lot of new announcements in these spaces because that's where they're leaning in? Or what do you feel like the news headlines are going to be this year?
Yeah, I do think that we're going to get a lot more agentic announcements out of Shopify this year as these protocols develop. I do think 2026 is the year you start to see results shown from these announcements, not just like, hey, there's a new protocol, which is great, but it doesn't really mean anything.
Who's using it? What are they doing with it? What value are they creating? Yeah.
Correct.
Here's the thing. Will Mr. Beast sell more chocolate bars because of UCP? I'm just curious.
I think the good thing now is here's how these new channels tend to play out is they start out low volume but high conversion, meaning like if you know you're there, and if you can get yourself showing up well, consumers are there shopping if have high intent, and so they're going to learn about you. The attribution from that finding to your store, I don't think is going to be there for a while. In much the same way, like if you're on TikTok shop, there is a formula that most brands have noticed that your Amazon sales and your D2C sales show up. I think ChatGPT and Gemini are going to be largely like that. If you know that you can get the official return policy, if you go check out there, if you already have a relationship at Amazon or at that store, chances are you're going to keep that relationship, because I don't know about you, like at the end of the day, ChatGPT is like using booking.com for a hotel. I mean, it's fine and it works, but is it like the place I go if I know I want to stay at a Hilton?
No.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But I'm a Marriott girl, so.
Boy. I love it.
All right. So let's talk about, you know, we talked about being bold, and do you want to give any highlights from your keynote or let the people see it for themselves in the video?
Yeah, so we are going to release headlines for the whole event in the next 2 weeks. We're currently in post-production on a lot of that footage, of which there is a lot, like photos, videos, et cetera. Yeah. So there's going to be a lot that we're sharing out of it, which is a lot of fun. The theme of the entire talk is the story of David and Goliath and being bold. And in 2026, we saw a lot of big companies start to move quickly and a lot of big companies being left behind. And so the message is like, who are you going to be? Are you going to be a nimble David that can overcome Goliath? Well, you need to take action and take some risks and get your team on the same page so that you can continue iterating. If you're bigger and you know you're slower, that's all the more reason that you can use your size to create momentum and an advantage, and not to make excuses for like, the data isn't perfect, or we don't have an ROI on the brand story. And so part of the keynote was presenting a few critical case studies like Skims versus Victoria's Secret, Aloe versus Lululemon. These are upstarts that really catapulted in some ways, especially from a growth point of view, past the traditional incumbents, because their brand stood for something. Mm-hmm. And what it meant is this is the identity of who we want to attract to this brand. And it really resonated with people in the audience.
Yeah, I thought it was so well done and really hit home, I know, for me, because even though you tell yourself, like, we just got to go do it, we got to make stuff happen, there is still that voice in the back of your head that's like, okay, but what if, and what if, and what if?
Right.
And you can like talk yourselves out of multiple cycles, or wait for, let me just wait another month to see what happens from a data perspective. And at some point, we are in this industry for a reason. You have your roles for a reason. You have your teams, you have your customers, and you sometimes hitting go is better than standing still.
Yeah, no, for sure. So I think that was a lot of fun. That was like kind of my first time I got to do a big keynote around a topic that wasn't just sort of industry news. So that was that was fun to go through that. So we have a lot more content on the way from that. And just the whole vibes of the event, I was super excited. The panel was amazing. Nick put together a great set of discussions. There was, you know, some tense moments in the panel, which was always good to see. So
that's right. And then, okay, let's flip to the show itself. Is there anything you want to say about the NRF experience and some of the you know, keynotes that you saw there, or just the hallway conversations, which sometimes can be more interesting than the actual content.
Yeah. I mean, I think what I saw, you know, I posted this week, and I kind of called it kind of the good, bad, and the ugly. I think the good is that vendors, which are obviously make up the show floor, realizing that they need to be talking about AI.
Right.
Bad, how they're talking about AI, which is really terrible.
Chatbots? Are we still talking about chatbots?
Like, yeah, some of them are talking about chatbots. There's a lot of show up and throw up. There's a lot of like, trust me, wink, wink, wink.
Yeah.
Out there. And you don't see any metrics, any data. And even when they have customers, they're talking about like, hey, our customer did this, but they're not talking about what their buyers did.
Okay. Yeah.
How is it helping
those? What was the impact of the customer experience?
Yeah, what was the impact? And so just that you can do this, I'm like, great, I can shave my head too. But what's the impact of that is I might lose my job.
Like Brittany did. Brittany.
Exactly. Brittany. Yeah. Yeah.
Bring it full circle, you know?
Yeah, it goes all back to Brit.
Yeah. No, I think that this is a great place to end. If you're good, I feel like there's so much more we have to say, but then there would be major spoilers as it relates to the See It For Yourself. I think the energy, the vibes, it did feel more hopeful overall. I think that was a takeaway I heard is like, I think just people were excited for a new year, ready to leave 2025 behind and come in fresh with excitement about where the possibilities can go. So I'm going to be Pollyanna, but that's what I'm taking home.
No, that's great. And I think that's a good message. We're going to be at Shop Talk. We're going to have an agentic debate series, try to unpack and debunk to really what's happening here. What's the impact to brands?
Yeah.
How are brands thinking about this? What's the framework for it? I think that's exciting. We're also reorganizing a lot of the content here this year on the Watson Weekly and the Watson Weekend. We're going to be really amping up our focus on our newsletter. More hard news that we're going to discuss together, you and I, Jess. Yep. Weekly interviews on Wednesdays. And of course, the Watson Weekly that you've always come to expect on Mondays. So actually see this podcast move into kind of the Watson Weekly banner as the weekend edition, still on Fridays, as you know and love, but not as an independent, separate podcast that you have to subscribe to differently.
That's right. We're mixing it up, trying to simplify, right? And give the people what they want, which is more news, more unfiltered, and more dancing.
More dancing is always a good step. So,
that's right.
I mean, I think that's fun.
So. All right. Well, we'll leave it here, you guys. We'll see you next week.
All righty.